You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading, in case I got bored.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Literary Trek, TFM's Star Trek books and comics podcast. I am but one of your hosts, Casey Pettit, and with me, as he always is the wonderful Jonathan Cohn.
Hello. I am ready to talk about a Voyager book.
Finally. It's been a long time since we've had a Voyager book at all, I think. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I feel like, you know, as the series went on, like, they just stopped publishing as many of them. And then, you know, all the previous hosts of Literary Treks did, like, all of the Kirsten Beyer ones. So, yep. You know, we're back in the, I could say the golden era of...
That joke was right there.
It was. I couldn't help it.
Oh. You know what? I like her books enough. I'll say let's call it the golden era.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, she was. I mean, what was her first one? The Murdered Son, was that number 6? Yeah. So I mean, she was there from pretty much the beginning. But yeah, we should go back and read some of those ones. You know, I was thinking, actually, we should, like, pick an author and just read all of their books, you know, at some point. Christy Golden would be hard because we'd only read Voyager books for a while.
Oh, man, twist my R.
I know, right? We've done a lot. Yeah. Well, or then there's, like, you know, the Peter Davids, where it's like, I mean, he's, you know, he was quite prolific, and then... Yes, we would go through all of the New Frontier books, which, you know, I'm not opposed to. So, yes, we are here to talk about a Voyager book. But before we do that, just to let everybody know how to contact us, you can find all of our shows by going to our website, trek.fm. Follow us on X and Instagram at trekfm. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And while you're there, join our listeners-only group, the Babel Conference. Just go to the Facebook search field and type B-A-B-E-L, and it should come right up. We also have a dedicated Goodreads group for Literary Treks, so join us there, and you can see all the books we've read and even what's coming up next. If you'd like to support the network, please go to patreon.com/trekfm, where you can select from any number of tiers. And if you have a show that you really enjoy, you can be an associate producer, just like myself and Greg Rosier, for Literary Treks. And any support you can provide would be greatly appreciated and help us keep bringing these shows to you. And especially as Chris and Matt are both bringing a lot of the shows back and doing some rewatches, go listen to them, support the network as much as possible, please. And lastly, please leave us a star rating and a written review wherever you get your podcasts. It is great for us and it helps others find the show. Well, Jonathan, it's been a while since we've done some comic books.
Mm-hmm.
We do call ourselves a books and comics show, so we should do some comic books.
Literary Treks, When the Walls Fell.
Exactly. Yes, we're talking about Star Trek issues number 25 through 30, which is the 6-issue arc called When the Walls Fell, which is not to be confused with Shaka. As we talked about on the other side of the page, there's no Shaka, there's no Darmok, no Jalad, no Tanagra in these comics.
You know what is in these comics? Two universes colliding, which was actually quite fun.
Yeah, this, I mean, so we pick up, you know, it's funny because it's been so long since we've read these. I kind of forgot where we were, you know, so just to bring everybody back up to speed, basically Lore has, you know, revealed himself to be the evil person that he is and activated his reality destroying weapon. And the cliffhanger that we were left on before was the Theseus traversing into another type of space. Yeah, for which we were hoping was fluidic space, but they never revealed that until we got into this first issue.
I thought it was on the last page of the last issue. Because when we jumped in, I was like, oh, of course we're in fluidic space.
I thought it was just that we both like were like, oh, if this isn't fluidic space, but maybe it was, but that's how long it's been. I'd forgotten, but... Yeah, so we finally get to catch up with species 8472 ever so briefly in this one.
Yeah, that was a species that was really underutilized, and I was you know, speaking of Voyager stuff, was really disappointed that post Voyager, post Nemesis, we didn't get, you know, we got the Borg invading, we never got the species 8472 invading. So it was cool that we didn't even see much of species 8472, but we did get to see some of fluidic space in the first issue. We did get to see Tom Paris kind of being the one to save the day, mm-hmm. Which was nice. Him getting slapped, being like, "Hey, get a hold of yourself. You need to save the day." That's yeah, cool.
Who was it? That it was.
It was one of the people on the Theseus.
One of the crew.
I don't think it was like a. Yeah, I think it was a red shirt.
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
but that was cool. But like, I got really excited, even more excited when it said it was the Enterprise that when they came out of fluidic space, and then it's not just the Enterprise, but it's the Chris Pine,
yeah, the Kelvin universe,
the Kelvin universe. Because I was like, oh, because you know they don't have to worry about continuity right now with the. Movies and stuff, since like no movies come out for like 10 years, and yeah, they don't care what they do with the comics. This is all this non-canon stuff. Yeah. So
I was gonna say, like, nobody cares about continuity once we get into the comics, like they're creating right. their own continuity.
Right. So it was so cool getting to see the Chris Pine people interacting with this universe, particularly since we got Scotty interacting.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that was pretty good. Well, and I like to, because we had like a whole series of Star Trek, like Kelvin Universe comics from IDW several years ago now. But, and so, yeah, it's been a while since we've gotten that crew. But I really thought it was fun how they were both kind of admiring each other's ships, but in different ways. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like Paris and you know, the people on the Theseus are like, that ship is like way more like sleek than I thought it was supposed to look, or you know, like they basically pointing out like, this is not the Enterprise A from our history or whatever. And then the Kirk and them are like, you know, I thought their ship would be a lot more advanced, you know, because the Kelvin universe is so far advanced and everything. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was just kind of fun how they kind of kept it pretty tongue in cheek. And then you know, even like Kirk, as each of these universes being destroyed, you know, they escaped fluidic space just as it was being destroyed. And now we're in the Kelvin universe just as it's about to be destroyed as well. And, you know, even how the authors made Kirk and that crew as heroic as they've been in those Kelvin movies, kind of willing to sacrifice themselves. And, you know, he said, I came in to this. To my, like, I was born into like kind of an alternate universe, I may as well die with it too. And I thought that was just kind of almost a poetic, you know, way to handle the Kelvin universe, especially for this particular storyline.
And like the last thing we see of Kirk is like him like seeing his dad being I'm joining you, dad, I'm going out the way you went out. That was really nice. Also convenient that it you know, we got just one issue in the Kelvin crew. I was like, oh, that's why, you know, the walls of the universe is coming down, and we're getting to see the go into the Kelvin universe, and it's just one issue, and we're like, no, and we're back in the main universe, and there's nothing except this black hole. And that really felt kind of filler. I was like, okay, we're spending some more time with our current crew, you know, he's cooking with them. But I was like, all right, we're going in the hole, it's gonna be in the hole. And then they just totally went into left field with like a whole new art style. a different type of storytelling in issues 4 and 5, or it's not issues 4 and 5, it's like 28, 29.
Yeah.
But the fourth and fifth parts of this arc. And man, that was, did you feel the whiplash with that part?
Yeah, as soon as we got to like the last frame or whatever of that third issue of this arc, I was like, that's kind of weird. This like watercolor, color pencil, like I wasn't even sure kind of like, you know, what it looked like. But then once we got into it, it's just such a bizarre story, because it's like Cisco, or I should say the Cisco, gone. Yeah, back in time, like everybody else is presumed dead. I mean, we can keep seeing flashes of Jake and Crusher and everybody dead or dying. And then Cisco spends like millennia on Bajor, and it's like, oh, did he go, is he like back in time? Because, you know, it's like he's creating the Bajoran religion and belief system and everything. And it was just, it was kind of weird.
It was very weird. And I thought it would just, you know, because we had spent one issue in Fluidic Space, one issue with the Kirk, and then one issue, I mean, with the Kelvin timeline, and then one issue with like No Space. I was like, all right, we're going to spend one issue rebuilding Bajor, and we're going to get back to it. And then it was a second issue. And now he's kind of like a god himself among mm-hmm. the people. And he kept switching his appearance between looking like this wise old, like, you know, Buddhist monk, and then also looking like Cisco. And it was weird. And then, you know, finally, he's like, all right, I'm going to go into the wormhole. I built the ship. I'm going in the wormhole. I'm going to connect with the prophets and stuff, which I was confused because I thought the prophets weren't in this universe, but I guess they were. And then and then it says, oh, by the way, the person who can save everyone, Kalis. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that was in the prologue of the first hit part. Yeah. That Kalis was important. I had, like, totally forgotten.
I had too. Yeah, it's only six issues, but, you know, like, by the end. But, and I mean, it's kind of what we found in this last issue with Kalis, too, is that he's been not abandoned, but kind of cast away on this planet by Worf and the Defiant crew. So we'll get into those ones next time. We're kind of jumping the timeline here, apparently, in the comics, like as they're converging, which is fine. But even that last issue with Kalis was kind of strange, because it was all Kalis and him again, kind of in, you know, he ends up back in time also, back in the time when he fought Molor, I think it was, you know, and creating kind of the Klingon traditions and everything, then to find the Cisco is kind of guiding him and trying to, you know, recruit him effectively to help him defeat Lore. And all of this is the result of kind of what happened towards the beginning of the Star Trek and the Star Trek Defiant comic series, as the what was the god something, I don't remember what those issues were called, but basically where Kalis had built up his army of people, including Alexander and whoever, and, you know, Kalis was going to become a god defeater or whatever.
So yeah, that's one of those, once we read the Defiant comics, we'll be more caught up.
Yes.
All of
this is leading to the next kind of arc, which will converge the Star Trek and the Defiant lines into the Lore War. And we're kind of coming to the conclusion of these runs of the IDW comics of these particular storylines.
Do they plan to start over, or are they?
So we've got right now, I don't actually know. I don't even know if Lower Decks is still going, but like currently, like as we record this in July of 2025, the first issue of Red Shirts is coming out, and that's like a 4-6 issue arc, just kind of a mini arc, just standalone kind of thing. And then there's a Strange New Worlds comic arc, again, about six issues. And then a Voyager one called Homecoming, which sounds kind of familiar, which like they're each going to come out, I think. So then August is when Strange New Worlds starts, and then September is when Voyager starts, or something like that. And they'll run for each of their runs. And so we'll actually you know, pick those up once they're all completed and kind of read them all as one. But I haven't. Oh, and then I think their new, what do you call it? Like kind of ongoing series is going to be, is it the first Starship or something like that? And it's basically like Kirk is somehow resurrected, but during the time of like the burn during Star Trek Discovery, like way in the far future. So it's kind of like Kirk and a new crew on an Enterprise or something like that. So
yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yeah. So I think that one either just came out or like the first issue, or it's going to be coming out soon. So we'll, you know, catch up with those, probably in early 2026 once we get through all the ones that we're catching up on. So yeah, lots and lots of comics to cover and coming up. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not totally sad that the Star Trek line is ending. It was kind of all over the place. Like there was, you know, they're definitely creative storylines and creative ways of bringing all these crews and everybody together. And you know, again, they're kind of taking that same tack with, you know, their new series that they're going to be starting here soon. And I kind of think I prefer things like the Voyager mini arc that's coming up, or the Strange New Worlds one, or, you know, some of these ones that are just standalone things, maybe not the ongoing ones. Cause then you end up with too many fillers. I feel like if you've got like a six issue story to tell, mm-hmm. let's just tell that story and not like have filler arcs here, you know, or anything like that, just to get us from one storyline to another. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see where it all goes.
Speaking of getting us from one storyline to another, why don't we go to our book discussion?
Let's do it. Well, so this, I don't even think we ever said when we started what we're actually talking about today. We just made jokes about it, but we are talking about Star Trek Voyager Gateways number 5, No Man's Land, by the one and only Christy Golden.
Mm-hmm.
And I, just to kind of start off, kind of overall, I feel like that the Gateways concept, you know, that we've been talking about this whole time,
mm-hmm.
really just set the stage for a classic Voyager tale.
Yep.
Here, yep. Mm-hmm. That, you know, and I, you know, I don't want to steal your thunder here because I did see your written review, but the Gateways were almost like the MacGuffin or whatever, just to get the story going, and then we had our story, which to me was just a great Voyager story. Mm-hmm.
I would say, I was actually thinking about this before we started recording, that this book follows a similar type format to something like The Year of Hell, where it really has enough story to be a two-parter. It's too long to be a single episode, but it's got mm-hmm. enough story to be a two-parter. It feels epic, like they're really doing some big stuff here, but yet, like a lot of the two-parters, like Year of Hell, they're putting everything in back in the box when they're done, except, of course, there's going to be the short story in the collection that's going to, you know, do the stuff with Janeway at the end. But I mean, it's gonna be, you know, everything's gonna be back in the box,
right?
Because this may have been post DS9, post or not post, but you know, later on in the next gen run. But Voyager was still going when this book came out, so they couldn't just, you know, continue the storyline or anything.
Yeah, they couldn't make big changes to the crew or anything like that.
Right. But, you know, very in classic Christy Golden fashion, she nails the characters. The reason that mm-hmm. I think they kept bringing her back is more than almost anyone besides maybe Byer. She gets the characters of the Voyager crew so well. The first scene where Chakotay is trying to get Janeway to go and relax and have some fun, classic Janeway Chakotay storyline, classic, mm-hmm. to the point that I was like, did Byer read this and be like, further evidence that they should get together as a couple in Full Circle? Because I was like, they have to, it's this, it flows so well, taking their dynamic from this all the way to that.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, just the kind of banter, even like she captures like the kind of subtle looks that, you know, Janeway and Chakotay might give each other on the show. Like, she's able to capture that in words. And, you know, even in those opening scenes where they're kind of, you know, joking, you know, with each other. And I can't even remember what it was that, like, 'cause I still remember the first line of the book is Chakotay telling her, "I'm sorry to say, but it doesn't look good." And it's like kind of a, she's asking him like how something, like literally how something looks on her or something like that. And then like, then once they find, like they go to Astrometrics and find out whatever's going on, you know, with all the gateways opening up, and he tells her again, he's like, "I'm afraid to say it doesn't look good." Like, just kind of this, and you know, she had to catch herself from laughing, and you can just see that happening and kind of that opening, like the cold open of the show or whatever.
And it's not just their characters that work real well. I mean, just the whole Voyager crew, I felt their voices were pretty good in here. The one character who feels like he got maybe like short shrift, and I don't know whether it was just because of time or whether what, but I felt like the doctor didn't get as much to do in this book. Usually he gets a bit more to do. And he had like a few scenes that were good, but otherwise I thought, you know, it's a Janeway book, certainly. But it's really also from like a lot of the other aliens' perspectives, because there's a lot of aliens in this book, and she's throwing them out left and right. And there were something like 60 ships that they encounter, with like 40 different species. And I'm like, man, for being, you know, just a small gateways book that's 230 pages, Christy Golden is trying to pack in quite a lot.
Right. Well, and, you know, and the one thing, and maybe we get this in the short story, is, you know, we get a little bit of that in some of the other books where there's, I mean, you know, I think in most of the books so far, we've gotten, you know, the gateways on the planets and the gateways in space, like orbiting the planets, and things happening because of that. This is the first time we've seen the real problem with these gateways opening, is, you know, with a lot of them opening at the same place. So there's something happening in this part of space, and maybe it's the nebula and the gateways, you know, working kind of against each other, which is part of the reason that made this area of space so dangerous to begin with. But you know, like Janeway's actually getting the problem that everybody else back home is kind of seeing, is like, this is going to cause just issues between races and everything. And Janeway's seeing that on a large scale. But even then, I think it was the Nenlars who were like one of the first ones that they encounter. They're like, "Well, we went through one, so we just thought we should just go back through it to get home. But then we ended up somewhere else. Then we went through it again. And we went, you know," and like, so there's just more and more issues that we're discovering cropping up from these gateways and all these people coming together. At the same time, like, even if Janeway and the crew solve any of these issues, it's not like, I mean, we're in contact with Earth now through the Pathfinder.
Yeah.
But it's not like they could just send the result home just right now, just like anybody else could. So, you know, like, we've definitely got this massive problem, and, you know, out of all the crews that we've read about so far, you know, like, we've only got New Frontier left, but Janeway seems like the one to give this kind of problem to, like, with all of these, you know, antagonistic races together.
And, of course, it's a Voyager thing, so a bunch of portals show up, and you're like, oh, this could be a way for Voyager to get home. And it's like, I love that it was like, there was no time at all for Golden to just, like, cross that and be like, nah. They're not getting home with this. Like, she didn't even try to get her hopes up. I mean, obviously, hindsight's 2020. I knew they weren't going to get home in this book.
Right.
But, like, if you're reading this in 2001, you're like, you know, maybe, you know, maybe, I don't think they would, but maybe, you know. So, she doesn't even get your hopes up. She's just like, nah. The characters wonder, and it's the answer's no. I did like that. I also, this is something that I didn't think this is the case, and maybe it's just my memory. All of the ships and characters that come through the portals are new to this book. We have not seen any of them previously, right?
Except the Hirogen, I think.
See, the Hirogen we'd seen before, but was it the same Hirogen?
Oh, no, I don't think so, because I'm pretty sure Tyranitar killed that Hirogen.
Yeah, it's Tyranitar. Exactly. Yeah. That is something that these would have plussed this. This was a, tipping my hat. I thought this was a pretty good book anyway, but something that would have elevated this and elevated specifically the series as a whole is if in the previous books, specifically the Next Gen and DS9 books, if we had seen ships going through the gateways and disappearing and then reappearing here and been like, oh, that's where the, if it had been like that ship, it doesn't have to be someone we know, like but at least if it was the same ship, same characters that had gone through, and at least that would provide like a continuity, and it would feel like you could have read this, just switch out some of the ships and characters.
Yeah.
Even the minor ones, the ones that are just like offhandedly referenced in the book. If they had done that, then it would have felt like, hey, this is an actual series. And if you read an individual book, it's a standalone. But if you read all of them, you see.
You know, I'll do you one better even. I think if either the Nenlars or Arkathi.
Yeah, the Arkathi.
I don't remember what they were. Yeah, but like Arkathi was like the main antagonist, the leader. Yeah. I think if either of those two had shown up either in the Next Generation or Deep Space Nine book and just like hailed somebody, and actually if it was Arkathi himself, like on their ship, and they showed up and he kind of had the same greeting of like, this is the ship, whatever, I demand to know why you've brought me here, or, you know, whatever he says to Janeway in this one, you know, and then if Picard or, you know, Kira or whoever had said like, hey, we didn't bring you here, this, you know, we don't know what's going on, and he was just like, ah, screw it, and then went back through the gateway, and then, you know, we pick him back up here. I think, like, because again, that would have been like a little nugget of just somebody showing up and then going back, like, and disappearing again in one of the other books, but then showing up here and just like that, oh wait a second, I think this is the same guy, oh, we didn't realize he was so bad, you know.
Right. Yeah, that would have really helped it out.
Or if we'd had somebody from the Federation show up,
that would have been really cool. Yeah, yeah, especially if it was someone from that meeting that we saw in the last two books. Even if it's just some captain or from the blah 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 ship, like we've never seen before.
And because then they could get destroyed in this one, going through the nebula, trying to help or whatever, and it'd make it more sad for our Voyager crew because we finally have this connection with somebody who are now lost in the Delta Quadrant with us, and now they're destroyed. You know, kind of an almost like with the Equinox, you know, like something like that. But
and maybe that was because this book, I believe, came out right around when Equinox was coming out.
Yeah, I might have.
So they may have been purposely avoiding the same, using the same themes.
Maybe
I don't know how well they were coordinated between the books and the shows in terms of like not stepping on toes. But there is something kind of fun in here, which is the dog that's not a dog. Yeah.
The dog that's
which
not
they
a
don't
dog.
Know. Like one of them calls him Fluffy and the other one calls him Barkley. I think Tom calls him Barkley and Neelix calls him Fluffy.
Yeah.
Which is also perfectly in line with both of their characters.
Exactly. I did like how they brought, it was, it's kind of a weird way to bring the dog out. I mean, like, it was a great way to set it up because they're out, like, trying to have like this shore leave or whatever. And like, I think Tom and B'Elanna are like on a beach somewhere. And then they were like, hey, wait, there's no life forms on this planet, but there's something out there. It looks like it's drowning, and basically save this dog, which, you know, and then there's kind of all the, you know, can we keep him? And
I'll walk him, I'll feed him, I'll take him newspapers.
And even Janeway goes and tries to get comfort from this dog from time to time. But
The dog was a great way to handle the 7 of 9 with the kids, with the board kids. That was next level, because I was like, because they needed to give them something to do, because at the beginning of the book, like, they're like, oh yeah, 7, you need to be getting the kids to have fun, and 7's like, I don't have fun, and I'm like, I relate to you, 7. But I was like, I wonder what they're gonna do. And then as soon as she brings the kids in to play with the dog, and she's like, you play with it. Okay, what do we get on your hands and knees and pet it? Okay, what do I do now? Like, that was it was funny. It was heartfelt. It was moving, moving the kids along in their development, and also moving 7 along. And I was like, it's a really clever way to do all that at once.
Yeah, And the doctor, even like his role in that was almost the kind of the father, because, you know, Tom, like, they want Tom to take him, but Tom's like, you know, I'm got a pilot that, like, yeah. I can't be there all the time. And then Neelix is like, well, I'll take him. But then the doctor's like, no, we can't have this animal around all the food preparation, so I'm just going to keep him here. You know, like, if you guys can't take care of him, I'm going to do it.
And then the doctor is like, I want a goldfish.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the goldfish.
Also, was, I don't know if it was meant to be funny or sad or horrific, but like at one point the goldfish gets deleted and then he's like, yeah, that was nothing. Okay. So, like, yeah. And I'm like, man, you just deleted, they just deleted your goldfish, man.
Well, because it was, because Seven sat down at his computer to do something, and she looks over and she's like, your goldfish appears to be dead. And the doctor's like, oh, yeah, you're right. Delete program. And it's just like, wow.
Okay. Wow. It's so callous.
Yeah. Especially for a doctor. Like,
I know.
Oh, man.
No, but that was a way to make it a micro story as well as the macro, yeah. To have, you know, the fun small story there. And of course, I loved at the end when Janeway was like, and I'm taking Fluffy with me.
Yes. Well, she's got to, because the whole thing from the beginning was they were going to send Fluffy back through the gateway. But when they realized they couldn't scan the other side of the gateway, they didn't want to just send Fluffy back, and she, you know, she couldn't go through. So now at the end of the book, when she's like, I'm going to go through this gateway, I don't know what faith she's got where she's like, and of course this is going to lead me to where the dog belongs, but, you know, I'm sure it will. But, you know, and having these moments of like levity and just kind of lightheartedness through the book were good, because, like, I mean, the actual story, like the meat of the story, mm-hmm. is actually pretty heavy. I mean, you get this between, you know, all of this logistical stuff that Janeway has to arrange. And of course, she's like the only captain, you know, in our Star Trek line that probably could have handled this as well as she did. I mean, Picard probably, because he's a diplomat too. But but then going through this super dangerous area of space, and then we end up with like two different murder mysteries. You know, by the time, like, everybody gets, well, almost everybody gets through this nebula, and one whole ship of the crew, I should have written it down. I don't know. The people who get frightened very easily. End up completely dead. And then some people on Arkathy's ship, because they've got slaves on their ship and have a slave uprising, and a whole bunch of people end up dead on that ship. And so just, I feel like the actual kind of murder mystery that we had in really kind of the second half of the book, or second or kind of last third of the book, was pretty well done, because there was just a lot of setup to point fingers at a lot of different of the alien races, of who could have killed all the people on the ship, who was at fault during this like slave uprising, because even Seven had some involvement of like kind of almost encouraging it, and just kind of like what happened, who's at fault, and, you know, like, you know, and Tuvok was kind of getting involved in this investigation too. But I just thought that whole kind of the whole last really half of this book was really, really well done with that part of the story.
Yeah, it has a lot of elements that are that work for it real well. You have not only the going through the nebula scene, which of course references Wrath of Khan a lot, mm-hmm. and you know, it's really sad because, you know, ships start being destroyed, and then they're like, all right, well, hopefully we'll make it. And then you have the Arluck stuff. You also have the diplomatic scenes where they're having people over for dinner or something. And those you were a little bit more light and also had to deal with the mystery. And then you had the whole murder stuff going on. It was, by the way, it was the Kaluk.
That
was that frightened species, which I felt so bad. Like, it was like, of all the guys to kill, man, come on, the sweet little Kaluk. Why do you have to do that to them? And as soon as the Nenlar were... you know, as soon as they had the scene where they're like, oh no, Captain Janeway's gonna be on to us, I was like, okay, this is a misdirect from Christy Golden, because this is too obvious that they would be the bad guys. We would never, we're just so kind and they destroyed us. And I was like, okay, under normal writing, that's what should happen. But it was too heavy handed.
Yeah.
So that's why I was like, there's gotta be something else with Arkathy.
Well, because didn't the Nenlars end up getting destroyed later anyway?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, yeah, that was, because I had the same thought. I was like, okay, this is a little too mustache twirling of these two people right now. Like, so, like, we're led to believe, yes, they are part of that rebellion, or those, you know, the people that are really going after the other race.
Dranians.
No, it wasn't them. It was like the ill, and this is the problem. There's
so many species. I wrote some of them down, but not all of them.
But yeah, whoever were the ones that were kind of like a couple hundred years ago.
Oh, the oppressed ones?
The oppressors, yeah. Whoever they were, but who were also there. But yeah, I kind of just had a feeling like, okay, there might be some confrontation between these guys later, but it's never going to be anything like a major part of the book, because yeah, she just gave it away right here that there's something going on. But then yeah, their ship ends up getting destroyed later, and it was just like, well, I guess that's the end of them.
And then you have the weirdest part of the book to me was like those like observers who were just kind of like there, and then they kind of pop up at the end being like, we've seen everything, we know exactly what happened. And I was like, it's a bit convenient, isn't it? Oh, of course, there was this species that nobody saw, so they were able to watch everything secretly.
Yeah. Watch everything secretly, but they have their own non-interference kind of guidelines.
Right.
Like, we can't say anything. We can't reveal ourselves. We're just going to kind of follow everyone through because we need safe passage through here, too. I thought it was an interesting race, just like, because it's kind of thinking outside the box of just the bipedal humanoid species or whatever. But then yeah, like I was kind of wondering, are these going to turn out to be like the Metrons or the Organians or somebody you know that we've met before? But it's it's not, it's just the Voldemort aliens, the ones who will not be named.
You're right, that's right, in the book they won't be named.
It was a deus ex machina.
It was, yeah, it was totally, I need a way to reveal this information about Arkathy, so I'm gonna have these people watch it. There were several decisions like that in the book, and that's really, to me, what kind of holds the book back, is, you know, the character work is tremendous, and there are scenes that work in the book that are really good. Individual scenes, I would say, like the stuff with the dog or canine thing, the scenes of Chakotay and Janeway, and that kind of goes to the character stuff. But when you look at even the plot itself is a good Voyager plot. Oh, there's these gateways, they're getting the people moving, there's all this death and murder mystery, like all of this stuff works. Just in the execution, what holds it back is that it's just not the best execution.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, I think, and especially when if this was just a standalone Voyager book where, you know, I mean, yeah, there were some of these things holding things back. And yeah, I completely agree. I think that the stuff with those who will not be named did kind of detract a lot, because it's kind of weird. I'm kind of just now starting reading this book called Everyone in My Family Has Killed Someone, and my wife has just read it and said, like, I really want you to read this. And it's kind of this murder mystery, but it's like written almost in like it breaks the fourth wall, I guess, with the reader. And it starts off with these rules of writing a mystery novel, and one of those rules is something to the effect of how basically a case can't get solved because of like almost like a divine intervention or just something that like they couldn't deduce from the clues. And I'm like, okay, so the ones who cannot be named in this book are that, like, our characters would never have known or been able to prove some of the things that had happened if it weren't for these aliens that were telepathically communicating. And Janeway knows, because of mind melds with Tuvok, that it's really hard to lie when you're communicating telepathically. And so it was kind of like, to me, it was just like, oh man, like, so our characters really aren't that smart now because they just had to get told the whole ending, or, you know, like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know what else could have been done there, or if they, you know, but at the same time, yeah, it did kind of take some of that away. And then kind of, again, like, since this isn't just a standalone Voyager story, it's part of this Gateways series, the fact that the Gateways have such a little part of the, and the, I should say the Gateways mystery has such little to do with this, because the whole thing is getting through this nebula and past all the Gateways that keep popping up out of nowhere. But then also solving this murder mystery, the Gateways really take a back seat.
Yeah, they do
for most of the book. And it's, kind of a shame, because I feel like, especially as the science of things go, Voyager's always been pretty good with that. Like, you know, like Seven, I think, really shined in this book with her involvement with the Borg children, but also with Vena?
Yeah, the Vena.
Slave,
slaves. That scene with her talking with the slaves, and then the doctor being the one to be like, hey, don't mess up the status quo. I thought that was pretty good. Although it was curious, because it seems, with how stoic she is previously, it seemed just an interesting choice. It makes sense that Seven would be against slavery and that she would have a personal connection, because she feels like the Borg was, in a way, slavery. Yeah. And yet, it just doesn't... it's just an interesting choice. I'm not saying it's wrong, just an interesting choice to see her be the one that takes action, the one that's so offended by it viscerally.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I could totally see Harry Kim in another book, if it was another writer, having Harry be all this, like, you know, frustrated, and having someone like Chakotay be like, just stop talking.
Yeah. I mean, I can kind of see it for Seven, just because she's got such a strong sense of justice.
Yes, she does.
Having been part of the Borg, and knowing, you know, she even made a comment at one point that, you know, the difference between these people and Borg drones was that the Borg drones didn't have a choice, or it, not that they have a choice. None of these people had a choice, but like that they didn't, the drones don't know that they're oppressed, but these people do. And like her sense of justice is telling her that if she can help these people, she should. And yeah, the doctor's kind of trying to say, not only, you know, we got the prime directive, but also just like, this is not the time or place to try to deal with this, because there's other things going on. And like, yeah, and this is still early enough, I feel like, in her kind of Voyager run, Sevens, that like her emotional development, I don't think, probably would have been quite there yet to really, I mean, I think that she could relate to these people, but maybe not as on that emotional level as she does here. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I really liked her stuff and the stuff with her and the slaves, but it was, you know, in some ways, it also didn't really end up going anywhere, because, you know, there was an uprising that was kind of instigated by what Seven told Marisha, I think her name was.
Yeah, Marisha, yeah.
And, you know, which kind of then leads to some of the murder mystery or whatever. But then even with Seven later sitting in the brig with Marisha and talking quietly, and Janeway getting all like, what were you talking about with her so quietly? She's a murderer. And Seven's like, no, she's not. You know, like I could see Seven kind of advocating for her, but maybe not quite the way.
Yeah.
You know, like I almost saw Kira, like,
yes, Kira would have fit this pretty well.
Yes. But I mean, even still, I'm glad there was something like that for Seven to do, rather than just kind of give her one-liners, you know, like, I mean, they all but said, fun will now commence.
Oh, I wanted that line. When we got to that scene with them, with the kids, I was like, oh, she's going to say it. And she didn't.
She didn't. It was close.
This was, but... well, I don't know what episode fun will now commence is in. So I don't know. Maybe it was, you know, in a later episode, but I don't think that Christy Golden was like referring to memes, that type of thing in this. But there was another character interaction I just thought was great, which is when Janeway just gets so frustrated with her Kathy.
Oh my gosh.
And she's just like, okay, I'm not going to deal with you anymore. You have to deal with our Tuvok. Vulcan to Tuvok, and she just points to him and says, "Go talk to my Vulcan, Tuvok."
Yeah.
And then he goes, and Tuvok is not gonna put up with any with our Kathy, and like doesn't faze him whatsoever. And
yeah.
and Janeway's like, "Why did I do that from the start?"
Yeah. Well, yeah, great. Like, yeah, Tuvok, I mean, he was classic Tuvok in those moments too. And you know, he's like, "No, you don't get to talk to Janeway. If you want to talk to anybody, it's me. You're nobody."
Yep.
And, you know, it's interesting too. Like, how I'm thinking about it more because, you know, our Kathy turns out to be the bad guy. You know, here, I mean, and we knew it from the beginning. And Janeway was kind of fighting herself the whole time. Not making snap judgments about people and prejudice or anything, and even but until she has dinner with him and she's like, "Okay, that guy's just a jerk." But like, and even there, and I get that wanting to kind of like hold back your own opinions without, you know, being like, "Well, clearly our Kathy's the murderer," and you know, because like she'd already dealt with that with the Hirogen. Like the Hirogen were set up to look like the ones who murdered them, like the Kuluk. The fact that it turned out to be our Kathy, and it's just like, you know, Janeway and them, they're like, "Oh, I knew it. I knew he wasn't a good guy or whatever." But it's like, but you, there were tons of clues, and you were kind of purposely suppressing them.
And it's kind of interesting because the way a lot of authors, especially Star Trek authors, would approach the story is you have this one dimensional jerk. And then you have the other people who are accusing them of stuff. And it turns out these innocent looking people are really the bad guys. And the jerk ends up being a good guy. That is a classic Trek trope used in like all the Trek episodes. So the fact that they reversed it, where it's like he looks so bad that they just don't. They try to make the reader assume it's going to go to the people, but we've seen that. We know that play. And so we're like, it's a little bit too much going on with the jerk. And then it turns out, no, the jerk actually was the bad guy for once.
Yeah. Even when Marisha's sitting there in the brig for murder, and you've got our Kathy there who'd been holding slaves. Now, granted, that's their culture. And, you know, like there are certain things we have to, we may not agree with, but you know, you have to kind of be careful around, you know, like, but I mean, as soon as that slave uprising happened, now with the Kuluk, that one got me. Like, it made sense once it was revealed to be him, but like I was thinking of a bunch of other races, which I was like, this is great. But with the slave revolt and everything, like from the word go, I was kind of like, I'm sure the slaves had an uprising and whatever, and when they revealed, oh yeah, he just used that as an excuse to like get rid of anybody who disagreed with him, I'm like, yeah, no kidding, like it was like that was pretty clear that was what happened, but whatever. But
right,
yeah, so I mean, I think, you know, I feel like it's a kind of a shame that the Gateways stuff, I wish this was a standalone Voyager novel and they'd done something else with the Gateways, or had, because Harry also didn't have a ton to do in this book. Mm-hmm. Like, had Harry and Seven maybe working together and Astromechish to work on the Gateways problem, just to kind of tech the tech and science the science like Voyager does, you know, just to keep that plot in there to some extent, or even had some shenanigans where Voyager's having to go through a bunch of Gateways.
Well, you know, they had the opportunity because the book is so short.
It's so short.
It's so short. It is the, I checked. It is page count wise. Obviously word count wise, I can't know that. But page count wise, it is 4 pages shorter than One Small Step, which makes this the shortest book in the Gateway saga.
Oh, wow.
And it's 230 pages. You had other books in the series that were like 300 pages. It's like you could have added 70 pages. And now, granted, this is how Christy Golden wrote back then. She wrote 230, 240 page books, and she was consistent. She expanded it a little bit when she went to the post Endgame books, because she had a little bit more freedom to tell stories. But still, she writes short books. And yeah. so I'm not surprised, but I'm like, man, you just pay her a little bit more money, expand it.
Yeah.
Expand it by 70 pages. And I think that she's used to the way the numbered books were happening. And maybe she hadn't gotten the memo that, hey, you're allowed to write more now. Or maybe she wasn't allowed. I don't know what the reasoning was, but they could have.
Yeah.
They could have, because I don't think it should have been its own standalone.
Yeah.
I just feel like if they had just done more, it would have fleshed it out a bit more.
Well, and it's just, yeah, it's kind of funny looking at this one on the shelf with the rest of the Gateways books. It is noticeably thin. I mean, even One Small Step looks thicker.
It does look thicker on the shelves.
But then, you know, yeah, when you look at like Chainmail, which is one of the longer ones, I think Cold War's, I think the next one we got.
Yeah, that one's pretty long.
It's long and very small font.
Although I think the longest one is the finale. I think
oh, sure.
What Lays Beyond is huge.
Yeah, but there's also six like novellas in that probably. So.
Yeah, right. But it's like, but like the small, it's hardcover and it's.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it was a hardcover. But yeah, like, I mean, you look at this one and then you look at Chainmail, which neither of us liked really at all. And I'm thinking, okay, she could have added 50 pages to this just to add one more story element kind of sprinkled throughout. And maybe it would have taken the book down a notch a little bit, but it still would have been better than some of the other books, or a couple of the other books in the Gateways series.
They could have added 50 pages here and taken away 50 pages from Chainmail.
There you go. Yes. Yeah. So, but I mean, you know, overall, I thought this was a good book. It was a fun book. It was quick, short, you know, everything you want. And, you know, I've rated this a 3 on Goodreads. I mean, that might have been almost a little harsh. Like, I probably could have gone up some, but it's it definitely didn't live up to the Next Generation or Deep Space Nine entries, but it's still, I mean, it's right now got the number 3 spot for me in the Gateways books so far. So yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I really am kind of curious to read the short story that kind of ends this one, just to see what happens to Fluffy.
Yeah, what happens to Fluffy? I'm right there with you that the Next Gen and DS9 are the top 2 slots, and then this one's 3rd, and then I think I would put One Small Step 4th, and then Chainmail 5th so far.
Yeah.
I liked it, especially because the character work is so good. And also just there's, and this is personal bias, I'll admit, but there's just something about reading about the Voyager crew that just makes me smile. So that's a little bit personal bias, but I liked that. If Goodreads did half stars, I would have given it 3.5. But since Goodreads doesn't let you do half stars, my personal rule is if it's going to be a half star, bump it up, just to be nice to authors. That's why there's certain books in this series that should have been 2 stars, but because I did like 2.5, they bumped up to 3. That's how I felt about this. Was it was a 3.5-star book. Like, I really enjoyed parts of it, but I also felt it was lacking in others. But I gave it a 4 on Goodreads because, half stars, grr.
Yeah. And that's, yeah.
And everyone's nice. Like, just move over to StoryGraph. And I'm like, but I use Goodreads.
Yeah. I've heard of another one too that other people use, but yeah, I'm just
too many.
Yeah, there's too many. And no, I like that. I think, it's funny because like, as we talk, I'm like, you know what, she really does get the characters. I wasn't a huge fan at the very beginning as like some of the adjectives that she would use, like somebody's sultry this or their, you know what, I don't know, like it's just some of the words she used, but like, you know, you could definitely hear their voices. So yeah, she definitely, definitely knows this crew. So yeah, we'll have to get some more Christy Golden on our reading list here. Well, we just have one more Gateways book before the big finale, and that is in the New Frontier series, which I think
Cold Wars
is
the name of the book.
The Cold Wars, yes, by Peter David, of course. I think it might have been Dan and Bruce at one point they covered the very last New Frontier book, I think, but otherwise no other New Frontier books have ever been covered on Literary Treks, so that'll be pretty interesting, because it's been a long time since I've read any in fact, Cold Wars may have, I can't remember, I think Captain's Table came before Gateways, so I think I got through Cold Wars, and then I don't think I read any New Frontier that came out after this one, so I don't really know what to expect here, because it's been so long, and...
It'll also be a little sad, because this is the first Peter David book we're reading since his tragic passing this past month.
Yes, yeah, and it's been a long time since we've read a Peter David book, so it is about time too. So that'll be good.
And we will read more comics with the next one as well.
Yep, we'll get back to the Star Trek Defiant ones and see why KLS was on the planet he was on. Yeah, keep those going. But yeah, until while you're reading those books and comics and everything, Jonathan, how can people find you?
You can find my YouTube channel, which is just Jonathan Cohn. Talk about all things books, including Star Trek, but also Star Wars and fantasy, science fiction, and thrillers and historical fiction, all that stuff. You can find my Twitter or X or Twix, which is at Jonathan Cohn, where I talk kind of all things. I throw in some movie stuff and sometimes political memes in there. And then... my Goodreads is also at Jonathan Cohn. If you look up any of the Star Trek books that we've covered recently, you'll find my review somewhere in that book's listings.
Yeah, and you can find me pretty much anywhere, but mostly Goodreads and Letterboxd at Knitting Trekkie. And then I'm also a frequent observer of the Babel Conference and other Star Trek book groups on Facebook. And that's just under my name, Casey Pettit. And yeah, that's about my only online presence right now. So with that, thank you everyone for listening. And until next time, live long
and read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number one.